Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Faceless, the radio show where we listen to your voice and talk about the corruption we all face every day in our courts. America's courts have been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the color of law to defraud their victims of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We the people must confront the perpetrators of these crimes to have any hope of creating transparency and accountability in our courts and repairing our legal system. We stand with you to create this accountability. It's time to face us. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Face Us Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed, and this is the Inside Scoop. Today is August 3rd, 2022. And my name is Robin Austin. I'm with my co-host tonight, Lou Ann Fleming.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
We have a full radio show tonight.
And we're
so...
with Marcy Friedman.
Oh, Marcy Friedman is joining us as well.
Marcy, we've got you on live with us. Say hello
yes,
to everyone.
Yes, I am. Good evening, everyone. Good evening. I'm very
welcome to the show. Always Hi. Happy to have you.
It's the coast. It's
yeah, and
happening.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You betcha.
You got it, Marcy. And we wanted to make sure that Hillary Hogue is taking the night off. She's a little under the weather. So she will be definitely here next week. So she has the night off. And hugs to you, Hillary. Anyway, we are going to have a really full radio show tonight, everyone. So please, we're not going to try to talk over anyone. And if that happens, we will call out your name to speak. And remember that all of our radio shows are recorded and archived. We've been doing this for over 5.5 years, so you can go on to
blogtalkradio.com/hiddentruthrevealed, and you will find our archives.
Right, and we will probably be taking, calls in from our listeners probably more than halfway during the show because we really have a lot to talk to our guests about, and it's going to be a really informative. So we're going to give most of the time for them to speak, and so we're really excited to have our guests on tonight. And let me tell you a little bit about them first. This is about the groundbreaking legislation proposed to address judicial corruption in California. So tonight, we are having on investigative journalist Janet Phelan, who wrote an article about this, and then we're also having Dr. Richard Fine. He's referred to as a crusader, the taxpayer, advocate, attorney, and the people's lawyer for his work in challenging and correcting the abuses and corruption in government. Then we also have Robert Gettinger. His mother was also conserved in guardianship with, like, all these other hundreds of thousands of cases going on lately about guardianship abuse and I Care a Lot movie. And his mother was also isolated and in a locked dementia home without his knowledge by his sister. So this is going to be a big powerhouse show, and I say get your pencils and papers, and you can also listen to this as it's going to be archived in as one of our radio shows at the end of the show. And you can share the link where whatever you want to do with it. Give it to your legislators or whatever, but this is going to be very informative. So, Hillary, we are going to start the show. Is there anything you want to say briefly why we start the show?
I thought Hillary was off tonight.
Yes,
Marcy.
Yeah, okay. Hillary is off tonight. I'm talking to Marcy. Yeah. Well, you can tell.
Marcy,
there you go.
Yes, I am more recuperated, and of course, as you all know, that I'm going through the phases of mourning my mother, and I have to deal with the anger stage. But I thought, why let my pain go to waste? So I have really been working hard to help other people. So happy to be part of the show. As you all will know, that I was a feather when I met all of you and everything that we have all gone through. This show has definitely been a part of my healing process and been able to help other people across the nation, and is overwhelming to see how many victims have been hurt by this scam, because it is a scam. And now that my mother is gone and I'm able to sit back and view, and I go, wow, I was not the only one. And this is happening in our country, and it's very diabolical for people to do this to the vulnerable and the elderly when they cannot defend themselves, and shame on them because it's cruel what they have done to all of us.
Exactly. And many of us on this radio show has been through the guardianship abuse and the liquidation of our family assets. The guardianship abuse, been through a lot. Just like one of our guests coming on tonight, Robert Gettinger, he also has been going through this, and we're going to be having him speak on this radio show as well to what happened to him and all this legislation going to start happening in California. So this is going to be a really big radio show tonight. So please bear with us. We've got three guests with us tonight, and they're all excellent on speaking. So the first guest we're going to bring on tonight is going to be Janet Phelan. So Janet, welcome to the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, grab a pen and paper. That's just my advice from having this guest and some of our others that I've talked to before, and you're probably going to learn some things that you'll want to jot down.
Yeah, there you go.
So, welcome to the show, Janet.
Janet.
Well, thank you both so much. Let me know if it starts to break up, because I can call back in. I think I'm on a dicey line here. So without further ado, I want to mention that I'm also a victim. What happened to my mother, who I can say without any concern about retaliation, I can say she was murdered by her guardian. And of course, the assets were drained. So I have really, the experience to me was earth shattering, and it required that I reassess my entire perception of what America was all about. How can this happen in our country? And I think a lot of us have asked these questions. So in pursuit of trying to find out how this can happen, it became very clear to me that judges were regularly breaking the law and doing so without any repercussion at all. Basically, there's judges have absolute judicial immunity for their actions on the bench. So you walk into a court, and you're basically like walking into an arena where what the judge says goes, whether or not it's legal or not. So it struck me. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, we're just agreeing with
me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Go ahead. But Janet, I also want to let our audience know that you are definitely one of the other families that have been in the guardianship abuse arena. As I mentioned at the beginning, I said it was only, Bob Gettinger. But I just wanted to add that in there too. And I think there's like four of us on this radio show tonight that have gone through this. We all know exactly how the game is played. But go ahead and finish with that.
Right. So it occurred to me that the judges, So it occurred to me that the judges weren't breaking the law, because they're just up there as constitution-hating, diabolical, black-robed freaks. They're actually being paid to break the law. It has to be. There's no other explanation for they're doing what they're doing. So I embarked on my own investigation, and I came to the conclusion, indeed, that judges are being paid off, and are being paid off through several different mechanisms. So when Richard Fine created this legislation to address judicial corruption in California, I was aware that he had previously come up against the judge cabal when he discovered that judges were getting extra benefits, they called them. They were being paid by the county as well as by the state, and then, of course, hearing cases involving the county, which is a clear conflict of interest. So this was another mechanism through which the judges were receiving extra money. So I was very interested in what it was he was proposing to address this, because as some of you know, I'm not a big proponent of more laws when the laws on the books aren't being enforced. It doesn't seem to make much sense to me. But there is something very different about Dr. Fine's legislation, because it really does an end run around the already established mechanisms to make that are in place to make sure that the corruption continues and we get screwed. And what Dr. Fine has proposed is something very, very different. So I think with that sort of intro, maybe we can turn this over to Dr. Fine now and he can explain what it is he's put together.
Right. And Janet Failing, I know that I posted your article in different areas, but how can they find you? Because I think Facebook's been stopping a lot of your articles from coming on there. I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
But how find these articles? Can they type it into like Google or what's the best way to find these articles?
Okay, I write for Activist Post. So if you go to Activist Post and put in my name, you'll come up with years and years worth of articles. Interestingly enough, Luann, I'm no longer, Facebook is not allowing me to post anything on your website. What I do post on my homepage is generally shadow banned, which means that if it has a link in it, like an article link, nobody sees it. So the best way, you know, I this is very irritating to me, because I am a journalist, and the purpose of being a journalist is so that people can read your work. And I'm just irritated to no end at Facebook for all their stupid machinations. But if you go to Activist Post, that's where my articles are appearing. And this one was published in June, and it is titled Groundbreaking Legislation Proposed to Address Judicial Corruption in California. So that's the article.
Okay, good. Yes, and I published it in some places, like I said, on Facebook, and then it vanishes. So it's really disturbing to me why they keep doing that to you. I just don't understand. You know, besides, they don't want none of this news to get out. You know what I mean? It's irritating when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead. We are going to go ahead and bring on Dr. Richard Fine right now. We have heard so much about him lately. Dr. Richard Fine, you are joining us right now. Say hello to everybody.
Yes, I'm here.
Good. Thank you so much for coming on to our radio show. I was so excited when Janet approached me about doing a radio show about this. I've been listening to all the interviews that you've done. I've listened to Janet. I mean, there's so many good ones out there, and I try to post them, and for some reason they don't get posted. So I talked to Janet earlier, and she says they're just not letting them go onto Facebook, so we're going to get some other different platforms to start going on besides that. But anyway, go ahead and talk to us how you got involved with all, you know, this guardianship abuse, the corruption in the courts. And I heard that something about how you were jailed or something like that. Can you kind of just give us a rundown how this all started?
Sure. It started in a very, very strange way. The my basic practice was antitrust law, securities law, complex litigation, and class action work. And the more complex litigation, the better it was as far as I was concerned. But what occurred back in around 1999, I was approached by a union. It was the environmental union working for the county, having a problem. And the problem was is that they were having trouble getting paid because the county was taking the money from an environmental fund. It was a special fund set up to deal with environmental things. And they were getting paid out of that fund. But what the county was doing is the county was raiding that fund and putting it into their general fund. They had a lawyer, but they wanted someone that they felt could really go up against the county and handle the trial. And so I was brought into the case. I tried the case. I won the case. And that the county was taking $45 million a year out of the environmental fund. They had $11 million left that they hadn't dispersed yet. I took the $11 million, put it into a special fund, got an injunction that stopped them from taking any more money out of that fund, and ended up having the union get paid in addition to that. So all that took place. It's a great victory. The next thing that happened when it came time to get my fees, which were well over $1.5 million, the judge said, well, it's bad for a county union to sue the county. I said, what, are you crazy? No, this is the only way that they get any relief. So we didn't pay the fees. The judgment stood, and we took it up into appeal. And the appeal court held the same thing. And I said, something is wrong here. Didn't know what it was. That was the first case. Second case that came along, I found out I was brought in by a taxpayer who found out that L.A. County was taking $150 million cash out of a transportation fund and putting it into their general fund and borrowing another $150 million more. So it was basically $250 million coming out of a transportation fund illegally. It was another special fund. Went to trial. The county came in and said, well, we really need this money for other things, and that's our problem. The judge responded and said, no, your problem is a management problem, not anything like this. I won the case. The county appealed. There was a L.A. Superior Court judge that got appointed to go on to the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals ends up reversing the case. Now, I've had two things that have gone wrong. This is all still in the year 1999. Third case comes along, and this was a person, an ordinary person, who got from his wife, and he was supposed to pay child support. And because the wife had gone on welfare for 2 weeks, the county was taking care of collecting the payments. He paid the payments regularly. He was on a friendly basis with the wife and everything. I'm not getting a payment. And he said, but I'm paying them. Well, it turns out that the district attorney was collecting the payments, and the district attorney was not giving the payments out to the recipients. Well, we sued, and we got the district attorney to admit, yes, I've been collecting the payments, and I've been collecting the payments for 2 years, and he had $14 million of payments that he had collected from all these people that had been on welfare or had assigned the right to collect to the district attorney, and he wasn't paying them out. We're in the trial. I put the district attorney on stand or his representative. They admit to doing all this. The county moves to dismiss the case, and the judge grants the motion. Now the craziness really getting there. Well, in the meantime, we've now reached the year 2000, and in the 2000 convention of the California Lawyers Association, the California Chief Justice Ronald M. George made a comment, and the comment was that the judges from Los Angeles County should really be paying for everybody's lunches because of the fact that they're getting these payments from Los Angeles County above and beyond their judicial salaries. And that is either unconstitutional, criminal, and definitely wrong. And that got published in the Metropolitan News, a local legal newspaper. I picked up on that, and I said, aha, it was the aha moment. And so I went in, and I found out that that was true and everything. I used his quote. I used it in my brief with respect to the third case, and that's when I exposed it. And what happened is I exposed it in 2000. I went up and sued the state bar and everything because of these things that were happening in 1999, the state bar, the chief judge of the L.A. Superior Court, reported me to the state bar because of the fact that they had trumped up these charges. The state bar went after me. We had a trial. And in 2003, I moved for summary judgment, which means I should win, they lose. The state bar withdrew the case in the interest of justice. So that case went away. Next thing that I knew, that in 2006, another judge came in, it was actually a commissioner, came in secretly to the state bar and filed a secret complaint. They came out in 2006 with another complaint against me. In the meantime, at the same time, Judicial Watch had copied my complaint against the county, and they had more political whack than I did. So basically, what took place is that their complaint went through. It was called Surgeon against the LA County. They lost in the trial court. They got up into the Court of Appeals. They got a correct judge who was a former deputy attorney general. And the payments were held to be illegal as unconstitutional under the California Constitution, Article 6, Section 19, which says only the state legislature can designate the compensation of the judges. So, bang, the payments were illegal. Now, at the same time, the disbarment thing against me came through, and I argued First Amendment, all these different things. I lost. It went all the way up to the California Supreme Court. Four out of the seven California Supreme Court judges had received the illegal payments. So the next thing that happened is that they disbarred me. In the meantime, I had sued the state bar and the state bar trial counsel and the state bar court for having taken illegal monies and things on this order. When the state bar came in, I lost in the trial court. This is in the federal court. When it came up to the Court of Appeal, state bar came in and said the reason for the disbarment had nothing to do with the allegations, but it was because I was against SBX, a bill that came in by the LA County judges who hired a lobbyist for $10,000 who went to Daryl Steinberg, who was the president pro tempore of the California State Senate, and he put a bill called SBX 211 through the legislature in 3 days. And that made the payments legal and gave all the judges that received the payments and all the counties and courts that gave them the payments retroactive immunity from criminal prosecution, civil liability, and disciplinary action for having made and received the payments. So that became what is known as SBX 211. So now the next thing that happened is that I came in and I said, well, given this, my disbarment was a fraud upon the court. The state bar general counsel came in and said, did not oppose my motion. In fact, there were five motions, and they did not oppose any of them. there was a California bar rule that says if there is no opposition, it may be deemed that the opponent's position has consented to the granting of the motion. What did the Supreme Court do? They denied the motions in violation of the bar rule, of the rule, and the rule is law. So now you have the Supreme Court working against their own law. So that's what happened. That's where things stood. So basically, there we were sitting. Well, in the meantime, before this barman came along, what took place is that I was involved in a number of suits which were getting dismissed by the Superior Court judges and going up into appeal, and my going in and challenging them in the appeals and losing because the Court of Appeal justices had also received the illegal payments. So we had the entire court system was a systematic corruption that was taking place. In the one case that was in there at the time that this whole disbarment and everything took place, I was representing a condominium project that was next door to a project that was on Marina Del Rey land. And the Marina Del Rey land was owned by the county, and they had leases with developers who would develop apartment projects. And one apartment project, which was really owned by Jerry Epstein, wanted to redevelop from 250 units to 500 units. So they went before the building projects group, and that's where I was brought in. And I showed that they shouldn't really be able to do it and everything. Well, it passed the building project unit, and it went into the Board of Supervisors. Now, in the Board of Supervisors, one person didn't vote. There were four people that were voting, and I found out that Epstein and his people paid two of the four supervisors' contributions 6 weeks before the vote. Well, that's illegal. Those supervisors voted anyway. So it became a 4-0 on the supervisors' vote with one abstention. Well, that being illegal, I brought that up. In the meantime, what happened is that during the process of the case, I missed one day in asking for the trial. The other side missed 60 days in coming up with the administrative record. So we had two things taking place. Judge Yaffe went in and he said, well, for your missing it, I'm going to go in and I'm going to fine you the amount of money of the other side's attorney's fees. And with respect to their missing 60 days, no harm, no foul. And I'm off the case because now at this point, the state bar had held me involuntarily unable to practice law while they were doing their proceedings. So the next thing is January, Yaffe goes through and does his thing. I qualify him. I say I'm on a hearing. We have a hearing. I get him to admit that he took $860,000 illegally from the county. I literally put him on the stand, and he admits that. I disqualify him. He doesn't respond to the disqualification within 10 days. There's another law that says if you don't respond within 10 days, you have consented to the disqualification. So now Yaffe's an illegal judge. He enters an illegal judgment against me for $45,000. They then go in and try to go into get my financial reports to try and enforce that illegal judgment. I tell them, no, I'm not going to give them to you. And so what takes place is that they go in and they move for a contempt order. Yaffe holds a contempt proceeding. I get Yaffe's now the judge. I put him on the witness stand, so he's the judge and the witness judging his own testimony. Well, there's a California Supreme Court case that says you can't do that. Yaffe does it anyway. So then he holds me in contempt on an illegal contempt proceeding and throws me in solitary coercive confinement for not giving them my financial statements in order to enforce this illegal contempt proceeding. And there I stay for 18 months in a jail cell that is 11 feet by 7 feet by 13 feet until one day, 14 months, in the meantime, I'm taking the writs of habeas corpus and everything, but 14 months into this, when it's up in front of the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, Yaffe says, oops, I made a mistake. And that took him 4 months after that to go in and let me out. He let me out the day after I was visited by a group of Hasidic rabbis who came in and they said, we're going to talk to him. Well, I don't know if they talked to him or if they didn't talk to him, but within 12 hours, the sheriff's guard, who was taking care of me and so forth, came in to roust my cell. He rousted the cell, and I told him, I said, you know, this is the day before the Yom Kippur, which is the highest Jewish holiday. I said, God's going to get you for this. And he kept rousting the cell. Then he came back and he said, you're out. I said, that's even a greater joke than the one you just pulled. He said, no, it's true. You're out. He got the trustees to come in, pack everything up, and I was out. So that gives you sort of a background of what happened.
Good Lord.
That's how I became involved in dealing with corruption, because I brought a number of corruption suits against developers and L.A. County with respect to the leases on the Marina Del Rey port land. They had 400 acres of water and 400 acres of land, which they were leasing out, and there's rules as to how you can lease things out and how the public has to benefit. And I brought all those cases, and the judges were dismissing the cases. I also did a survey at that point in time because the L.A. County Council was releasing their figures, like in a particular year where they had maybe 750 lawsuits against the county, 400 of them were immediately dismissed by the judges. And then if any suit came to trial in front of the judge alone, the plaintiff lost. And the only things where the plaintiff might have won is if it wasn't in front of a jury. So I was able to prove all that with statistics and documentary proof from the LA County itself. And then I was able to get to the auditor and find out how much money each judge was getting. So that's how I knew how Judge Yaffe got $860,000. So that became the whole systemic thing that was happening in the corruption of the LA courts. And one of the things that was in SBX 211 is SBX 211 asked the Judicial Council to go in and do a survey of the disparity in judicial payments between counties that were paying off and counties that weren't. And in that disparity study, that's where the figure came out, that 90% of the Superior Court judges in California were getting illegal payments. So they did that part of the work for me. And they also, giving the judges who were getting the illegal payments, they giving them the retroactive immunity from criminal prosecution. That study did, and SBX 211 did the work that I really didn't have to do. The study called them the criminals, and SBX 211 called them the criminals by giving them the retroactive immunity from criminal prosecution. So that's the background, and that's how the whole thing started. Now, the next thing that takes place is that SBX 211 did all these things, but the one thing it did not do is it did not compensate the victims. So they have everything going in favor of the judges, but what happens to the victims? Nothing. And I'm a solution-based person. So basically, the problem that we were facing is that in 2010, in Sturgeon 2, there's a second Sturgeon case challenging SBX 211. And what happens is that in the second Sturgeon case, the court says, well, this is a problem for the legislature to solve because SBX 211 is really an interim bill. It's not solving anything. So the legislature has to come up with a solution. And then there's a third case where they have it and they say it again. So from 2010 until the present, 12 years, nothing is done by the legislature. So how do we solve the problem? And here you can go back to anyone that's gone through college and taken psychology 101. It says, if you're not happy in the sandbox that you're in, you take your shovel and your pail and you go to another sandbox. And that becomes the solution here. How do we get out of the sandbox that we're in and go to another sandbox? To me, all these things that you have happening with respect to getting out from this conundrum is to go in and create a solution that takes us out of the sandbox. Exactly. And at the same point in time, on June 3rd, 2021, President Biden came out with a memorandum declaring corruption to be a national security issue. So we have a presidential memorandum taking place. We have the United Nations Convention on Corruption, which the U.S. signed, which says that the nation states should find ways of dealing with corruption. So we have that. We have articles, coming out in the Wall Street Journal, the Globe, all these other places talking about corruption. And we have SBX 211, which obviously can be amended to deal with these things. So what I did is I came in with a commission, a permanent state commission to oversee the judiciary and compensate the victims of judicial misconduct and judicial abuse of power. Now, judges can be removed by the legislature for judicial misconduct. That's one of the things. They can also be removed by the commission for judicial performance. So you can do it by impeachment by the legislature. The legislature, I think they may have impeached maybe three judges, if that many, in the entire time that it's existed. And the Commission on Judicial Performance might have removed one or two judges in their entire history. So they're not doing anything. So basically, what is this commission going to do? So the first thing what is this bill going to do? So what the bill does is that it amends SBX 211 to take out Section 2 and Section 3, which in Section 4, which goes in and makes these payments legal. And then it establishes the compensation to these individual victims. And then it sets up categories where you had the abuse of power. And these are the general categories. The category that allowed the county or court payments to judges to negatively control individual judicial decisions, to negatively control a category allowing court payments, county or court payments to judges to negatively control the decisions, a category allowing anti-Semitism and bias against religion, race, gender, or sexuality, to negatively control individual judicial decisions, a category allowing physical or mental disability of the litigant to negatively control individual judicial decisions, a category allowing bias against status of representation, such as self-representation before the court to negatively control individual judicial decisions, a category allowing age of a litigant being 65 years or older, commonly known as elder abuse, to negatively control judicial decisions, a category of judicial and political retaliation by judicial officers and associated entities such as the State Bar of California against lawyers or others who expose and or challenge judicial misconduct of judicial abuse of power, a category of judges who are disqualified under law and do not leave the case to negatively control individual judicial decisions, and a category of a combination of any of the above or other unlawful factors to negatively control individual judicial decisions. Basically, what I did is I took the factual things that happen with judges, and some of them that we don't even know about, to use that as the basic categories. So now what happens that whatever it can be that comes up as a fact, what can be any cause for bias, you can collect on. And then establish an independent state of California permanent commission on judicial oversight, victim compensation for judicial misconduct and judicial abuse of power. And this is a commission. 12 voting members, 4 current elected officials or the designees, well, current, 7 citizen advocates and a chairperson. And out of the 7 and the chairperson who are not or were not members of or employed by the judicial branch of the California state government, to be individually paid under the state of California system at the rate of compensation equal to the compensation for the governor of the state of California, which is presently $204,000 a year, mm-hmm. serving up to 4-year terms of no greater than 8 years total. AA, the then current governor of California serving without extra compensation, or his or her designee with compensation, representing the executive branch of the state of California, the then current state controller under the same terms, the then current president pro tem of the California State Senate under the same terms, the then current speaker of the California State Assembly under the state terms. And then as far as the citizen advocates for civil court reform, for criminal court reform, for family court reform, for juvenile court reform, for probate, and then Robert Gettinger for probate court reform,
right?
For appellate court reform and or Supreme Court court reform, for civil, elder, human, individual, property, taxpayer, tenants, veterans' rights, and or other rights reform, and for me being the initial chairman.
Wow.
Then you're going to have the commission's employees will be paid under the state of California compensation systems, and the duties are, amongst others, to directly compensate the victims of judicial misconduct and judicial abuse of power through the state controller, to ensure the state controller completes the requirement to report the offending judicial officer to the Commission on Judicial Performance on a monthly and annual basis, to ensure the Commission on Judicial Performance completes the requirement to complete each investigation reported to it by the California State Controller within 6 months after receipt of such report, and conveys semi-annual reports of the results of such investigations to the California State Auditor, to ensure the California State Auditor continuously audits the Commission on Judicial Performance, to ensure the Commission on Judicial Performance is fully investigating, reviewing, and making determinations as required under law on each judicial officer's individual and historical misconduct as reported both by the California State Controller and independently from other sources, makes annual reports to the state Senate and state assembly to conduct the Commission on Judicial Performance in conducting its duties and including but not limited to its successes, failures, and operational deficiencies regarding the misconduct of the judicial officers, and makes recommendations for legislation to improve the operation of the Commission on Judicial Performance to reduce the misconduct and abuse of power of the judiciary, including but not limited to the Office of the Chief Trial Counsel of the State Bar of California and the State Bar Court, and then enforce the 36-year individual judicial term limit. That's something we're establishing in this legislation, and perform such other acts as necessary to administer and enforce this legislation, commencing upon the effective date of this legislation, under funding of $100 million annually or more provided each year to the annual budget and or amendment thereto through a trailer bill for the 2021-2022 annual state budget and within the consecutive annual budgets thereafter. And then we go, and we have a number of other things, you know, that take place. So that's basically the legislation. Now, the interesting thing of this legislation is that this year the legislature passed a bill to form an organization to go in and look at the Commission on Judicial Performance and to make recommendations of what it can do to improve the Commission on Judicial Performance, and that's a bill that is going to allow that particular group to work for 2 years. So What this bill does is this bill, you know, doesn't take away any of the powers of that particular group, but they were just limited to go in and investigate. That really wasn't helping anyone. But what we've done is we've said, Commission on Judicial Performance, you got 6 months to finish any investigation you're doing. How you get there,
right?
You know, but you got to finish and you got to report it. Care of all the things, of all the problems that the Commission on Judicial Performance had. In this last year, the Commission on Judicial Performance had over 1,200 complaints. They sent out one letter, I think, suspending a judge and a couple of other private recommendations, and that's it. I mean, now they have a staff and they have all these different things. What the hell were they doing? I mean, it's amazing that they're a constitutional body. They have all these people working and one letter, and they aren't bound to finish anything in any period of time. So for all these years, they've basically been sitting around. There was an audit of the Commission on Judicial Performance, I think, in 2016 that said they basically weren't doing their job. So they've had all this before, but they don't do anything. Who is the head of the Commission on Judicial Performance? The Chief Justice. Who is the head of the California Judicial Council? The Chief Justice. So, now, what we've recently, and we're coming out with this, we came out with our legislation, you know, a number of weeks ago and everything, actually probably about a month or two ago, and it's out there on courtvictims.com and uglyjudge.com, and it's beginning to get a lot of attention. Janet wrote her article in June and everything. Well, guess what's happened recently? 4 days ago, or maybe five, I think it was on the, so it's maybe 3 or 4 days ago, the California Chief Justice said that she's not running for re-election. They have, as far as the Supreme Court justices are concerned and the appellate court justices, they serve 12-year terms. So her first 12-year term started back in 2011. So she's up for a reconnection, shall we say. So people have to vote as to whether to keep her or not. If she gets 50.1% of the vote, she stays in for another 12-year term. But she's decided to retire. And she's had a lot of problems. I mean, for instance, all these organizations that she's the head of that basically don't do anything. That's number one, including the Commission on Judicial Performance. Number two, it came out that she has had the California Highway Patrol doing safety precautions for her and the other justices, and that's been costing $22 million a year. But no Chief Justice, no California Supreme Court Justice or appellate justice has ever had a threat against them.
Wow.
So people are wondering, well, what's this $22 million a year being spent for? Now, we do know that part of it has been spent taking, chauffeuring her from her home in Sacramento to San Francisco every day and chauffeuring her back. So that's part of the money, and people have raised concerns about that. And there's concerns basically with the thing I described to you earlier with the California Supreme Court turning down the writs or the motions that I've brought with respect to the fraud upon the court with respect to my disbarment. And that's caused a certain amount of problems for her. And now the legislation, which is out there, which is just really pointing to the systemic corruption that is existing in the California judicial system. And that corruption started way back in 1985. And taking you back to the beginning of that corruption, how did it begin? Why did the Los Angeles supervisors, county supervisors, pay this money? Well, when you look back at one of the reasons, as I mentioned before, is Los Angeles supervisors get paid the same amount of compensation as the compensation paid to the Superior Court judges for the County of Los Angeles. And that's in the Los Angeles Charter. So in order for the supervisors to raise their pay, they had to compensate these Superior Court judges who are sitting in the Superior Court for the County of Los Angeles. So by doing that, they raised their own pay. Very tricky. But it was the solution.
Obviously. God almighty.
It was a beautiful, underhanded way to raise their pay. Well, now, this last time around, they raised the pay probably by about around $50,000, $55,000. So that's what started it all. A simple way to raise pay, raise their own pay. And in the meantime, taxing the making the Los Angeles County residents who are paying property taxes, you know, sort of double dip.
Double dipping, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. They're paying twice.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm glad that.
They pay twice for the judges and twice for and paying it twice for the supervisors.
Oh, gosh.
So that was the beginning of it.
Yeah, no wonder they want to stay on the board there. No wonder they want to stay up on that bench and stuff. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And so how long were you an attorney for?
Well, I actually became an attorney in 1964. I graduated from the University of Chicago Law School, and I was on my way to the London School of Economics, where I was going to do a Master's of Law dissertation, and that got large, so they recommended I do PhD registration. I did that, and then I stayed on until 1960. I would have finished in 1966, but I stayed on another year, and I received a PhD. But I took the bar in Illinois in 1964 before I left for London, and I passed the bar in Illinois in 64. I didn't begin actually practicing until 1967, and I actually started my practicing in London because I received a job after my PhD. I was offered two jobs. One was with the United Nations in their Civil Rights Division, but at that point in time, the person who was the head of the Civil Rights Division was the son of the Aga Khan, so they weren't doing too much in civil rights. But the second job was in the international part of the U.S. Department of Justice's Antitrust Division, and that was right up my alley. because my thesis was on international comparative antitrust law. So I took that job. But I had, during those 4 years that I was in London, I had traveled to every country in Europe with the exception of Romania, Bulgaria, and Yugoslavia. So it took the government a year to do my security clearance. So I did the first job in London for the year, and then when the security clearance came through, the government called me and they said, you got 3 weeks or 2 weeks to get to Washington, D.C. to take your job. So I left the London job and I went to Washington, D.C., and that's how I did it. So the official practice started in 67. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm still, even though I'm not qualified in California,
right.
I'm still qualified to practice law in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. So that, so basically, I do strategic consulting on specializing in judicial corruption and abuse of power. And then if you have a case in the U.S. Supreme Court, as far as I know, since the last time I spoke to the clerk there, you know, I'm still qualified to practice there.
Right.
So that's my situation.
So you, okay, so I wanted to ask you a question. So we have Robert Gettinger on with us as well, and I heard that he has worked very closely with you as well.
Yes.
And so I thought we would go ahead and bring him in, and because from what I heard, you work closely with him as well. And his mother was also put into a guardianship, conservatorship case. So explain how you met. Oh, actually, I can actually talk to him. Let's bring him on live now as I can find him on our little thing here. Robert?
Yes, I'm
Gettinger,
here.
Joining
ahead.
Us, everyone. Robert, are you with us?
Yes. I'm with you. I'm with
Thank
you.
Thank you for holding on. I mean, you've been holding on the phone for like 50 minutes or so. We appreciate you doing that.
No
what
problem.
I heard,
I think the
you...
person...
Pardon? Go ahead.
The person that needs to be speaking is Richard, because the solution is the solution for everybody, not just for one case, because there's millions of cases of people being abused and violated all over the United States with the same scam, the same abuse, and it all ends up with the judges.
Exactly. And that's why I also wanted to bring you on, because between the two of you, and I know you're speaking for thousands of people, not just your own mother, but thousands of people that have gone through this guardianship abuse, like the I Care a Lot movie. And so we wanted also to talk about how you got involved with this and how you come up. I've seen The Ugly Judge all over the place in courtvictims.com. And that's why I'm really excited to have you on to our radio show, because we want to talk a little bit about that as well. And then kind of mix the two in together, how you two worked on getting this legislation and how well you two worked together on this whole issue. I think it's amazing go ahead.
It's really interesting how it all came together. When I originally put the Ugly Judge site together, I was putting it together because I was working with somebody to try to get Richard Fine out of jail. It was a fellow named Sautel. And we came up with this name about Ugly Judge stories. And so I started the site, and I started putting up all these judges and all the things that they were doing and the victims and even my case. And through my case, thousands of people started contacting me saying, hey, the same thing's happening to me, you know. And then I realized I wasn't alone. I thought it was just an isolated thing in the beginning. And like everybody, they believe in the court system. They believe in the judges. They believe in law. But once they get before the judge, they see that the judge doesn't care about law. The judge doesn't care about the truth, evidence, documents, nothing. The judge just cares about money. And anyways, that's been going on for years and years, collecting more victims. And then all of a sudden this year, Richard Fine pops back up again. And we started working together because he spent all this time putting together this amend SBX 211. And I think it's a solution, and it's at least a start in California, and it can be used in all the states. But we have to start somewhere, because nobody is doing anything, and the problem is just getting worse. It's ridiculous how bad it is. There are judges that are becoming judges or lawyers that are becoming judges that have no business being judges, the way that they treat law, the public, ethics, it's just disgusting. I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on. Every American needs to know what's going on in our courtrooms and what's not happening, and it's definitely not justice.
Yeah, and I talked to Janet Phelan, and thank God, she is just remarkable with her journalism. And she told me that you two work together, and I thought, wow, that is just a very powerful team. And I saw you up on a couple speeches that you've done with the four of you. I know that Dr. Fine was in there, you were on there, Janet Phelan, and then there was, I think, the host of the other show, and it was just unbelievable how knowledgeable you were to explain how this was being done. And so if you can explain that to us as well and how they can find those videos. I have some of the videos that Janet sent to me, but every time I post anything at all, my stuff gets taken down off Facebook, you know, and it's, I'm just really getting irritated over all that.
It shows you how powerful the other side is, the way they control a lot of these things, where they can make a couple of phone calls and things can happen, and the next thing you know, you end up in jail or something. That's happened to me as well.
Really?
Tell us about that.
Tell us about that. How did that happen?
Well, this was back when I was working more with just Janet, but I had started posting stuff on the internet and exposing these judges and basically saying what I think should happen to them is that they should all serve long prison terms and the punishment should be harsh because these judges are not afraid of anything. They're enjoying immunity and impunity that they don't deserve. And they're just they're out of control. But anyways, the ex-president of the Pasadena Bar that helped my sister pull off this fraud and embezzlement and stealing from my mother that eventually killed her, he went to the Pasadena Police Department and started claiming I was threatening them or whatever. And the next thing I know, it's the middle of the night, and I'm getting dragged out of my house by a whole group of officers and taken basically in my underwear to the jail in Pasadena. And I'm told I'm being arrested. 3 days go by. I sit in jail. I never go before a judge and never charge with anything. And then all of a sudden I'm told, okay, you can go. You've just been detained. And they basically push me out the back door of the jail with just my clothes. No wallet, no phone, nothing. And I have to find my way home from about 100 miles away from where I live. And this is the way the police department tries to intimidate people and do this for judges, because there's another famous judge that was behind this that the detective was telling me, and that's Judge Ava K. Koenigsberg Bob, who was exposed way back in 2005 by the LA Times that did an investigative story and showed that the probate department in Los Angeles was totally corrupt. But did they change it? Did they repair it? No. The same thing. It's just like the Commission on Judicial Performance. They claim they've put something in place to protect us. But it's all a bunch of fraud. It's just more money being spent by giving their cronies jobs, and then they don't do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Can I jump in here? Luanne, can I jump
go
in
ahead.
For a second? Okay.
Sure.
It was brought to my attention by one of our activist groups today that Senator Elizabeth Warren and Congresswoman Jaya Powell have introduced a bill to reform the broken judicial ethics system. This is in Congress, U.S. Congress. And it's a very clever bill because it sidesteps around all of the real minefields. For example, there's going to be some sort of ban on judges investing in something. They can't hold investments because their investments, a case might come in front of them. But it's very carefully worded so that the real ways that the judges are being paid off under the table are left intact. And it's like a piece of very delicate lace that completely doesn't cover the issue that needs to be covered. And and it creates new mechanisms for judicial accountability and overhauls the broken judicial recusal process, and it allows all this dirty money that's going to the judges to basically the stream will continue on. So what I tried to do today after finding out about this, I just want to mention this really quickly, is I tried to call Senator Warren's office, both in Washington, D.C., and then also in Massachusetts. Nobody answered the phone. It goes to a voicemail, and they want you to email them, and they love you so much, and they want to protect your health under COVID, but nobody answers the phone. And the same with Congressman Jayapal. Nobody answers the phone. You can't talk to a real person. So I left messages with both voicemails that I was a member of the press and wanted to talk to the press secretary. Did I get a call back? No.
No.
So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
That's good to mention. I mean, it just shows you, you know, that, you know, and we've got the same thing going on here in Colorado. I mean, we are trying to change the Judicial Discipline Committee, and we have lots of talks on with the justices of the department there. We're speaking in front of them. All kinds of stuff is. Then we get another article that comes in. It says Colorado Judicial Department opposes independent board to oversee judge discipline. It's like...
Which is exactly what the Supreme Court, just the head of the Supreme Court, said... I don't want to be in the business of being in charge of judicial discipline. But then you get this article that says, well, it turns out that the judicial department doesn't want to go outside the judicial department for judicial discipline. Well, duh, of course. If you got a club of guys that have been robbing everybody, they don't want to go outside of the club of guys that have been robbing everybody and say, now let's let somebody else decide if we get to continue robbing everybody. That's really, you know, if we're gonna break it down
this is Richard. If I may jump in here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Janet sent me a copy of Elizabeth Warren's bill. The interesting thing about it is, number one, she wants to have the United States Supreme Court follow the ethics rules, which a lot of people don't realize that the United States Supreme Court does not have any ethics rules that control them. And, you know, you would think that they would have had that. And interestingly enough, I think it was 1969 when Abe Fortas was sitting on the court, and he actually resigned because of the fact that he had given a lecture or something to a group that Lewis Wolfson, who was a very famous businessman, controlled, and he had received an honorarium and everything for having done that, and that came up, and the furor became so large that he resigned the court, even though there was no case that was coming up to the Supreme Court in which Wolfson was involved. And yet, now, contrast that with today, and you have Justice Thomas and all the things that are happening with him, and he's not resigning, and he's not going anywhere. Or you take the case of Bush versus Gore, where basically it was one of the justices, and his name shouldn't slip my mind, but it is. He was the one that was teaching at the University of Chicago, my former law school, where his son-in-law was working for the law firm that was representing Bush. I mean, so this tells you some of the things of how bad it is with respect to the Supreme Court. Now, you have other justices on the Supreme Court that are just super ethical. I mean, we'd not even think if something even came close to a sniff of lack of ethics, they would be, you know, they'd be off the case in a minute. The other thing that the bill doesn't do is it doesn't really look at, in disqualifying a judge, what really happens. Because I'll give you an example. In the Central District of California, when you move to disqualify the judges in that district, one of the judges will be the one that sits on the motion. So do you think you're really going to get a fair ruling when a judge that sees his buddy or her buddy every other day is going to go and rule on that judge's disqualification and disqualify that judge when the other side is you
who the judge probably has never met, never saw, and never will see? No way. So, and that's one of the failures of the bill. And I'm not so sure if they even look to see what happens with respect to these district courts on disqualifications, or whether they look to see what happens in the courts of appeal, where the judges decide themselves if they want to be, if they will accept the recusal or not, and if they don't accept it, they stay on the case. So the real question with that bill is something that Janet brought up, is the bill is looking at certain things. And mm-hmm. those certain things, you know, are very nice, but it really isn't helping you. I mean, you can go in and you can get the judge's financial reports, and you can find out a lot of stuff on the judge's financial reports. However, if you ask for it, the administrative office of the court will tell the judge that you have asked for his or her financial report, and they will delay giving that report to you for a number of weeks, and that period of time will be beyond the time that you could actually disqualify the judge without reason and be in the point where you actually have to have the reason. So you really have to overhaul the entire disqualification system and really do what we're trying to do in California and set up an outside commission to really go through and deal with these things. Now, the judges aren't going to, well, the good judges will care less, you know, because they aren't going to have any problems. The bad right. judges are the ones that are going to fight it. And that's really what we're dealing. And taking it back to California, you're dealing with 90% of the Superior Court judges. Of that 90%, some of them become Court of Appeal justices, and then some of them become California Supreme Court justices. So that's what's happening. I mean, I like Elizabeth Warren. I think, you know, her heart is in the right place. She's been fighting Wall Street for years, and she's articulate on it. On this one, it's just a question, maybe it's a compromise as to what she thought she can get done, and maybe it's a start. But it's not going to solve the problem. It'll solve some problems. That's about it.
Gosh, oh my gosh. You know, and everybody's looking for a solution. Everybody calls our radio show saying, what can we do? I mean, there's just so much that needs to be done. What do you see in the end, or do you think it's so much of a money-making machine, this unorganized crime event we have going on with our judicial system? Do you think it's just going to keep getting worse? What do you think is going to happen? I mean, there's got to be something.
Well, my viewpoint is that the legislation that I put together is put together in a way that it cuts out literally everything that is working at the present time in California to corrupt the system. There are other things that are out there that fall into this, because the way that I set up the legislation is I'm going in the factual things that can cause something to go wrong. So it's not only the money that's being paid, you know, by the counties or the courts, the thing. And that's the way in my mind, that's the way to go about it. Look at every factual thing that's happening and get it that way, because in doing that, you're covering everything. And then if you have the outside commission that is going through and they're the ones that are giving out the money, you've taken the judges out of it. You move to the different sandbox. And by limiting the terms of the people that are in there, you know, people are only in there for 8 years. So, and they'll be in there with staggered terms also. So the best you can do is to limit a person's term of influence and hope that the selections are being done. I have the chairman doing the selections. Hopefully, I know in the first chairman, to put a little humor in here, I believe that I am going to be objective and pick the best people. Hopefully the person after me will do the same thing. And so basically, you know, if we can keep that going And if you can have people of goodwill on the commission, you're okay. As far as having certain people from the government involved, you have a certain amount of government influence in there, but that'll change every 4 years. So it's only the designated people that are going to be in there, but they're only going to be the designee of the current person in office. So I've thought of all the different ways that you can put in the checks and balances. You will never get rid of corruption. I mean, because corruption itself is a gift that never stops giving. But you can do things, put in a prophylactic to stop it as soon as corruption hits the door. Or if it does get in, you've got ways to at least compensate the victim if corruption gets through. I mean, I almost go back to, I believe it was Benjamin Franklin that said back with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, we're giving you a republic. It's up to you to maintain it. And
wow,
that's what we have here. You know, we have a system. The system is imperfect, but it's up to us to go in and retain it. I mean, there's another big group out there. There's the Divorce Corp group that has everything up where people can tell their stories and things. And I'm the co-chairperson of judicial reform for Divorce Corp. So we're hitting this on two sides. We're hitting it with all the things that is coming from Bob. And Bob is terrific. I mean, and all these things that he has done in getting it out there. And another thing that I didn't mention before, in addition to getting people to contact their legislators, we're also looking at lobbying groups. I mean, where are groups like Common Cause? Where are the groups that are protecting people with disabilities? You know, where are the groups that are protecting the elders? You have all these groups that are, you know, 501c3s or 501c4s that are out there asking people for money to go in and help them put forth for their causes. Well, they should be out there with respect to this legislation, because this legislation is getting money for their victims of the judicial misconduct. So they should be out there pushing for this legislation, because their groups themselves are out there aiding the disaffected and so forth, but they may be getting them grants or something, but they aren't getting them any compensation for the judicial misconduct. So they should be behind us 100%. So we have to go out there and get those groups in there. So if anyone that's listening is part of one of those groups, one of those lobbying groups and so forth, get in there and tell the leaders of those groups, you better get behind this legislation because I want to get paid. Now, one of the other things that I didn't get to is how much money is a victim going to get? And this is really interesting because this is the thing that really kills the judges. First of all, $1 million tax-free per year for each year for defamation, including libel, caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free per year for each year for unlawful caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free per year for each year for unlawful incarceration caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power, which existed or continues to exist. $10 million tax-free for fraud upon the court caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free for fraud caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free for intentional interference with contract caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free for negligent interference with contract caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free for intentional interference with propensity business advantage caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free for negligent interference with prospective business advantage caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free for intentional infliction of emotional distress caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free for negligent infliction of emotional distress caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free for bias against self-represented litigants. $10 million tax-free for bias against litigants with physical or mental disabilities. $10 million tax-free for bias against and or abuse against litigants 65 years old or older. $10 million tax-free for any other cause of action not mentioned above caused by judicial misconduct or judicial abuse of power. $10 million tax-free for any other bias, misconduct, or abuse of power by a California officer, commissioners, jury judges, Superior Court judges, Court of Appeal justices, and or state Supreme Court justices. And we have additionally for attorneys who brought cases against counties or the courts of the state of California where the Superior Court judges or individual judge receives supplemental or local judicial benefits or other unlawful compensations, and then it's one-third of damages alleged or shown at 40%, so forth. And then amending SBX by sections 11 to 24 to directly compensate the following individual victims as egregious examples. And these are the people that are in the case as the egregious examples. And then we have other things, the stuff that I mentioned earlier as to what they're doing with the categories and everything. So I've set the money at such a high level because of the fact that it's coming out of the judicial budget. So that means that in any one year, the money that is awarded by the commission, the judicial budget shrinks. Now, the judicial salaries are set, so their salary may not shrink, but their courthouses can shrink, their staffs can shrink, everything else can shrink. So the good judges are going to be looking at the bad judges and say, what the hell did you do in the past? And what are you doing now? Because we're all suffering. And the governor is going to be looking at people that he thinks of appointing and is going to say, hey, if you guys were involved in anything in the past, like having received these benefits, I'm not going to appoint you. Because I'm going to be looking at somebody getting all this money based upon what you did. And there's the group that looks to determine if somebody's qualified to be a judge is going to be looking and saying, we're not going to approve anybody that did this stuff in the past. So what's happening is that we're shrinking that judicial budget so that the judiciary is going to have to come into the legislature if they want more money. And the legislature is going to either say to them, well, we'll give you more money this year, or maybe we won't. Maybe we'll just let you suffer. So all these side things come in under this legislation. And that makes every judge that is sitting in there to really go in and start thinking twice. Now, to give you an idea of where the judges are at today, the new president of the California Judges Association is a man by the name David Rosenberg. David Rosenberg is a judge in Yolo County. Just to give you an idea of his history, in a case in Yolo County, and this is one of the victims that is in our legislation, he pledged a fraternity called Alpha Epsilon Pi. And the reason he pledged it is he's not Jewish. Alpha Epsilon Pi says that they're a Jewish fraternity, and he was dating a Jewish girl, and so he decided to pledge Alpha Epsilon Pi. Two things happened with respect to their pledge things. They had one thing up in the Lake Tahoe in Nevada, and they got all the pledges drunk, and he was lying in bed and everything, in, I guess, semi-comatose state. And he remembered the fraternity members flicking his penis. And that's hazing by definition. And the second thing is that his pledge father was drunk, and they were feeding him alcohol and everything. And the guy attacked him from behind, stomped on his foot. He has permanent injuries and may have to have his right foot amputated. He ended up suing the fraternity and the national fraternity. What took place is that the case was in Yolo County and everything. This has happened at the University of California, Davis. What took place is that it's in front of the Yolo County court, in front of a guy called Judge McGuire. Judge McGuire was appointed by Governor Schwarzenegger, I believe. So McGuire is the judge, and he was running for re-election. As it turned out, what happened is that the judge, our Judge Rosenberg, was the chief judge of Yolo County, and he was also the advisor to AEPI at the time. So he ended up giving $6,000 in loans and contributions to McGuire's election campaign. McGuire doesn't recuse himself from the case, and he dismisses the case. All of the other judges in Yolo County give money to McGuire. The plaintiff, the guy, goes up into an appeal, and appellate judges all gave money to McGuire's election campaign. They don't recuse themselves. The plaintiff shows this in his brief. What happens is that the judges realize this, nobody recuses themselves, and they come out with a decision in favor of the plaintiff saying that McGuire abused his discretion because he should have actually decided in favor of the plaintiff. So now the case comes back to Yolo County. The plaintiff ends up going in and subpoenaing all the judges to come in as witnesses with respect to their contributions. Then all of the judges end up recusing themselves, so the case goes into Sacramento County. We have another judge who comes out, went to USC's law school, and he's asked that, were you ever a member of either AEPI or DBT, another Jewish fraternity? He gets outrageous and says no. And he is against the plaintiff and all sorts of rulings and things on this order. The jury comes out against the plaintiff. The case is up into a second. He doesn't disclose under the rules. Every judge has to disclose everything that could be relevant, whether they think it's relevant or not. So he doesn't disclose whether, in fact, he received any phone calls from Rosenberg, about the case or from any of the other judges. So this is what's happening with the California Judges Association and who they put as their president. That gives you another sidelight as to what's happening in California. Now, remember that I told you the first time that I found out about what happened on the judges was from the Chief Justice at that time, who was talking to a luncheon of the California Judges Association, and he slipped out and said that the L.A. County judges should buy everybody lunch because they're getting this money from the county. So how's Rosenberg going to handle his situation? Maybe there'll be a new disclosure at the next luncheon. You never know.
You never know.
Man,
well, it just seems that you've done so much, and you know, just informing people, and you know, it's amazing that the system is this corrupt that we have to jump in and tell them no, 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 and no matter basically what we tell them, they don't care. They're like, yeah, so what? We're a little corrupt, you know, and it's monotonous knowing that this keeps going on, and not only to California, you know, Colorado, Florida, it's going across the whole nation. So if this was to happen, if you were to pass this, to say that this came around and this passed, how could we use that in other states? I mean, would it be the same legislation? Because I know all the different states are different.
Yeah, it's the same type of legislation, because the next state may not have the exact situation of the counties paying the money or something, or they may not have the same rules. But everyone, there's a high code of judicial ethics, and almost every state has that code. In fact, I would even venture to say that every state has the code, because there's a model code of judicial ethics. And every state has either adopted the model code or they've adopted a code that is like the model code. So that's going to be one of the things. And there's every state has criminal, there's a model code of criminal law also, and every state has pretty well either adopted that model code or a code that's like it. So the formula is going to be that once we get this through California, we can come in and look at every state, if there are people in the state that want us to do that. You know, we can look at every state, and we can look at what their criminal code says with respect to bribes, conduct for elected officials, and usually there's a conduct for judges and judicial officers. We can look at that. That's going to be in the criminal, in their criminal code. The federal code has 18 U.S.C. section 1341, which is fraud, and 18 U.S.C. section 1346, which is the intangible right to honest services. The cases hold that that's underneath that is a bribe. So that can be done at the federal level and everything. So it's not that hard to do. It takes a lot of slogging to do it, but it can be done. So
it can be done.
It's not something that is outside of the realm of possibility. It just takes a lot of work to do it.
So do you have to have a sponsor for the bill, or how does that work?
Well, what you do is you write the bill, and then you have to find someone to sponsor it, and then you have to be able to find the number of votes to be committed to get it through. Now, with the California bill, it's unique because SBX 211 was an interim bill. So that means that it was only supposed to be in there until the legislature wrote a definitive bill. And it was also an emergency bill. So it goes through all the processes very, very quickly. Normally, a bill can take up to a year or two to get through. So you really want to look at what's existing in the state, in the other states, to see if you can get it through as an interim bill, or you can get it through as a tag-on bill. Like right now in California, the legislature is in session. If you can get this bill, which is interim, tagged on to another bill that is going through, you know, you can get it through with that bill. That's already gone through all the processes, and you just get it tagged on. Get to know these legislative things. Now, the legislators, you know, they don't want to tell you all this stuff because, as I said before, their goal is to kick the can down the road, get out from doing something now, and put it on to someone else. Our goal is to operate very much as an analogy. If you may or may not remember, there was a kidnapping many, many years ago of a passenger jet, and the kidnappers took the jet down to Entebbe. So basically they came down to the Red Sea and they landed in Entebbe, and they had the jet on the tarmac at at Entebbe. What the Israeli force did is they flew down the Red Sea. You know, they landed. They killed the kidnappers. They took the kidnapped people, put them on their jet, flew back out of the Red Sea, and flew back into Israel. Our technique on this bill is exactly the same thing. You know, we put together the bill. We know that this is an election year. We know that certain people want to be reelected. Others have termed out, so there's new people involved. We have all the things up there on Bob's website. We have some. We have the bill up on the Divorce Corp website. We tell the people how they can do it. We tell them what they can do. We fill in as much as we possibly can on it, so we make it very, very easy to do things. So now all the people have to do is just go in to these websites and just fill in the stuff and contact the legislators. We even have gone so far, and I don't know if Bob's got it all up there yet, the personal emails of every legislator. Because when you go to their websites, you hit a generic email which will go into their staff who protects them. But here, we've now got the personal emails, and if we finished off the job as of yet to get the emails up to date of the personal email, that goes right to the legislature. It goes to, it'll say Senate, and then the senator's name, and then at senator.ca.gov. It gets right to him or her. You know, so they can't avoid you. Then we can call in and can say, hey, we sent the email to the senator. And we have it set up, the senator and the assembly person's name. Are they sponsoring? Have they responded? You know, are they for or against? You know, and are they avoiding? Have they not responded? And we'll track that every day to see what's happening so we know where to push it. And then we can go in and we'll set up the lobbyists, you know, all the organizations, and hit them. So we'll get the thing organized. The whole thing now is, are the people who can benefit starting at $1 million, are they willing to do something? Are they willing to take 5 minutes of their time to go in and do something to get $1 million minimum? Mm-hmm. And we also have a incentive program that if they show us that they've done it, so that when the time comes, when this bill passes and we set everything up and they go for their claim, if they show us that they've done this, they get into the priority section so that their claims go first out of the thousands of claims that will be coming in. So basically, right, it's like a class action. You know, if you got your claim, you're in the priority section, and that claim will get processed first. So there, all the incentives are there. We're back to Benjamin Franklin. You know, we've given you a system. It's up to you to maintain it.
And, right.
You know,
and
in a way, it's so simple.
Think about our legislation system, though. It's so hard to get anything through at all. It's so difficult out here in Colorado that it's hard to do anything.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What happens is that it's an interesting thing, because the legislators, for some reason or another, only want to engage with the people at election time because they need the votes. Other than that, they could care less. And when you look at the box that on their website, they have a list of things that they want you to talk to them about. Are you in favor of this or are you against it? Those are the things that they're interested in doing. And then they have other. And the other, they're asking you, well, what are you interested in doing? But basically the other is at the bottom of all the categories that they have. And as I told one legislator, we're not interested in the lagoons that you want to put in. You know, we're interested in this. What are you going to do about this? Could care less about the lagoon.
That's a good name. I mean, absolutely. I think this has been incredible to talk about, you know, because a lot of people want a resolution to be ripped off, including my family. You know, we were ripped off millions of dollars in my family. And that's why one reason we put on these shows is because I'm so pissed off what happened to my family, you know. And that's why we're all searching to find out the best way so other families don't get screwed like we did, you know.
And the thing that we all look for, of course, is at this point, we've heard all the stories, we understand problems are. And so for me personally, I'm looking for that solution that has real world compensation for the victims.
Absolutely.
Because that's where the rubber meets the road. That's when you actually do something that matters.
Right.
You know, we can talk and talk and talk, but if the victims have been victimized and the victimizers are walking around free with no consequence, and the victims have been defrauded and injured and wounded and killed, and nothing is happening, then all the words don't amount to hill of beans. It makes no difference. It doesn't help. So I'm really delighted to chat with you about this solution that you're proposing, because you see it too, and you're acting from a state of what is the way that we can make something that approaches something like justice.
Right.
And that's missing from a lot of the dialogue. It's missing from a lot. People are in pain,
mm-hmm.
and they say, look, I'm in pain. What can I do about it? What can I do about it? And the answer is, well, we have to take from the abusers and give to the victims. And
that is
a solution that I really like.
Yeah.
So I appreciate what you've been saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It also comes down
to the following thing. The very first thing that happens is that to tell your story is very cathartic, because you have to have a release of what has happened. But then after you have the release, you have to have a solution. I'll put it to you in a very simple way. When I did my PhD thesis, it was international comparative antitrust law. So the very first thing that I did was I surveyed all the antitrust laws of every country that had them in the world. So now I laid out every country's antitrust law. So I now knew all the antitrust laws. So once I categorized that, the next step was, I could probably gotten a PhD in the U.S., you know, just by doing that. But the next thing was you had to take them and put them together and find out where all of them match. So, you know, how many countries had price fixing, and then look into the price fixing and see what did each country do about price fixing. So you rationalize them together. So once you've done that, what do you do next? The next thing was to put together the treaty. So now you have the treaty, so you now know what is there. So that becomes the solution for the world as far as antitrust is concerned. And in doing that type of thing, you can lay out what's happened to everyone. That's going to be the first step. The second step is to go in and say, how is that going to affect the world? You then make the treaty so that everyone can sign on to the treaty, so that everyone is in the same place. So then you have something that you can enforce. Solution oriented. Just going out there and being able to tell everyone's story is cathartic for the person. How do you solve the problem? solving the problem is going to be what you learn from all of this. And once you have learned something, what you do to be able to resolve the problem. So that it starts out with somebody victimizing someone else, and it ends up with a solution. How do you compensate?
Right.
That's what we're doing here. Most people, I'll tell you that, most people don't even think in those terms because they're so hurt and everything from what's happened. But in order to get to the end of it, you have to go in and solve it. I'll leave you with a little bit of a story, and that is it's sort of under the theory that God gives you the opportunity. It's your job to be able to follow it through. And it's a story you may have heard of it. And that's the story of the person who's in a sailboat, and he's sailing in the ocean, and a storm comes, and the sailboat's destroyed. And he's out there hanging on a piece of wood. He's got his life jacket on, and he's bobbing along. And he says, God, save me. And so he's bobbing along. The person, someone comes along in the yacht, and he says, jump on. And he says, no, God's going to save me. God goes away. Supertanker comes along, and they drop down the ladder. And they say, jump on. He says, no, God's going to save me. Supertanker goes away. A rescue helicopter comes along. They drop down the ladder. They say, jump on. He says, no, God's going to save me. He dies, drowns. He gets to heaven, and he says, I want to see God. Okay, show him to God. And he says, God, I asked you to save me. You didn't save me. God looked at him and said, wait a minute. I sent you a yacht. I sent you a super tanker, and I sent you a helicopter. He said, what do you think? You didn't jump onto any of them. That's basically our problem. God gives us a method, the opportunity. It's our job to jump on the yacht, jump on the super tanker, and jump on the rescue helicopter. They're out there, and they're available. We just have to pick up on them and solve the problem. And that's what we do. It's really that simple.
Wow. Wow. That's really powerful.
I mean, I like that.
I really like that. I'm just like, wow. I'm just like drifting away with that. We are going to bring in some callers now.
We just have a few minutes left, but
yeah, we have
people that have had their hand raised for a long time that either have a question or a comment, and we're going to let some of those people in.
Right, and you only have a few minutes to speak, so we're going to bring in 561. Do you have a question, comment, and very brief?
561, you're on the air.
561?
Hello?
Okay, hold on. Okay.
Right, 561 is not responding.
Okay, how about, let's see if Marcy, hey Marcy, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still with you. And
okay,
I want to thank you so much for everything that you have explained, and I see my case all over it. So my question to you is, how does each day go about trying to get this insane thing done? What is the next step? What would you say, like someone in Florida and Colorado and all over, what is the next step to try to do what you are doing right now? Because this is an epidemic that it's going on nationwide.
I think the next step right now is if you have any friends, relatives, acquaintances, anything in California, tell them. I'll be declarative in this. I'll say, tell them rather than ask or suggest, tell them to get on board and contact or look on the websites, on Bob's websites of courtvictim.com, uglyjudge.com. And what's the third website, Bob?
Cleancourts.org.
Cleancourts.org. Mm-hmm. Everything's up on those websites. And tell your friends and acquaintances to go to one of those three websites, fill in the thing, find their assembly person or state senator, fill it in, and contact those people and tell them to go in and get the legislation passed. Sponsor it, support it, and get it passed. Once we get it through California and we show that this thing is viable, then we can go through and put it through any other state, because the other states will see that it's viable, that it works, and once you have one success, you just build on it. Taking on all the states simultaneously and not getting passed in any one state, people will think that it's a failure and they won't go for it.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Thank
Let's
you.
Make another.
Thanks, Marcy. She's actually one of our co-hosts. So
That's
that was
right.
a good question, Marcy.
That
Thanks
was
for,
a good question.
For there you go. And 270 number, you have a question or comment briefly?
Yes, I do have a kind of a question. A lot of things that I've noticed that the similarities between a lot of these people are that they target people with funds, with money. But is there any way that it could be considered neglectful or discriminatory that they don't really care for the other people in the world that are being exploited or neglected or abused? They only seem to care about people with money. And then my second question was, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, let me answer the first question first, and then we'll get to the second. Because the answer is very simple to the first question. These people can only make their money from people who have money. Because remember, all these people are getting paid out of the estate of the people with money. So if the person doesn't have money, these people aren't getting paid. These people are greedy. Therefore, they'll only target
people with money. Isn't that discrimination? Isn't that discrimination on some level? Can't we go at that angle?
Well, it's not going to – you can say it's discrimination, yes. But you aren't going to go anywhere because they'll still only target people with money because the whole system is working on money. The guardian gets paid from the money of the victim. The lawyers get paid from the money of the victim. The psychologists and everything else. All these people are getting paid out of the victim's money. If you have a victim with no money, nobody's getting paid. So it's not worth it for them to do anything. So discrimination sort of falls away. In a way, you're lucky if you don't have any money because they aren't going to come after you, so you're never going to fall into the system.
Sure.
Wow.
Sure. And that's sad because there's a lot of neglect and abuse out there with people that have nothing, and they're just left to rot, and they probably could use the help that the people that are robbing people are pretending to give the people they're robbing.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. What's the second question?
Well, I remember the thing about the 501, the charities or whoever, something about that. And I just so happened to look up a charity here in our state. And I looked at, it says Elder Abuse Charity Coalition something. And really, everything that you read, you would think that you could go to them for help, but really everything that they say and do is just them wrangling in more victims of, and so they're taking tax breaks to say that they're helping people, but really they're just defrauding people or fraud. I don't know the word. And that's
kind
of a crime.
What you can do,
go ahead.
Attorney General over here. Call the Attorney General of the state because they have a special office that looks into these things and report what you found, and hopefully they'll start an investigation. And if the charity is not operating correctly, they'll go after them.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah. There you go. We're going to bring in another caller. We've got actually a couple with their hands up. We have an 858 number. Do you have a question or a comment?
858.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hi.
Oh, yes. Hi. Thank you. And thank you so much for covering this issue and doing the work that you're doing, Mr. Fine. And it's such a critically important thing to be involved in. as you probably know. but I wanted to say there should be a way, because judges are either voted in or they're appointed by the governor in California, and there should be a way of evaluating the justice, the judges' outcomes of their decisions. So there should be some independent way that's not tied to the judicial system and the insiders in the judiciary, that's independent, like a citizen's body that has nothing to do with judges or judicial system, and they evaluate the judges' decisions and orders and outcomes of those orders to hold the judges accountable on an individual basis, because every other job has requirements and evaluation of how well the person, the outcome has to match the how well they're doing the job has to match in order to keep your job. So there should be some kind of mechanism put into place where the outcome of the judge's decisions and orders is being evaluated in just like any other job you would be evaluated.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You're going to have the criteria. There are things that are coming in now due to artificial intelligence and things where they're set up to be able to look at, like on summary judgment motions, you know, what judges have done in various summary judgment motions, and they're being able to acquire data to look at a judge and see what a judge has done, you know, in the overall history of his rulings, how many summary judgment motions he's ruled and granted and how many he's denied. But they have to set up, I know exactly what you're talking about, and it'd be wonderful if they can get it done. They have to be able to set up what criteria they're going to use in doing the measurements and everything. So the best that they're able to do right now is there's one, I think there's one group called Trellis that tries to track judges on certain minimal things as to what they've done on motions to dismiss and things on this order. But if I'm understanding you correctly, you want to be able to go into deeper types of criteria. And in that, you'll have to be able to set the things up. I'm not so sure that they've gotten that far into it. These things are being done by outside firms. They're not being done by anyone within the judiciary. They're actually being done by outside firms. And there's also stuff that you can look up. If you have to look up with conflicts, you can actually go in with some of these outside firms. If you want to know how many times the judge could have involved with a particular law firm or a particular lawyer, you can plug in the judge's name and the lawyer's name and basically track that, and then see out of all the times how many times the judge has ruled in favor of that lawyer. So you can get little stuff like that. But I know where you're coming from. And it's just really a question as to who's doing what. But none of that is actually being done by the judiciary. It's all being done by outside firms like Westlaw or LexisNexis or Case Text or Trellis. And they're the ones that are setting up the databases. Yes.
Okay. We've got time, and I don't want to cut anybody short. We have one more caller, 510 number. You got to be really quick because we only have a little bit of time left. 510?
Are you there?
510? Can you hear me, Hillary?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, hi. This is Venus, Hillary, Luann and Hillary and Robin. I don't know who's all there tonight. Venus from California, Northern California, advocate for probate court reform, and I just really enjoyed this show. And what we're doing here is we're taking action. Luann, I don't know if you heard recently, but our grand jury is investigating the public guardian's office in California, and they also have a report, you guys, I can send it to you. And there's a report that they did. Tom Coleman and Supervisor Nate Miley were very instrumental in this occurring. And so this is a great opportunity for us to kind of piggyback off of this and, you know, bring it and expose it and let them know that the people in the public guardian offices that are suffering are us. You know, that's what Kathy's
there office, you go.
Who she's been served by, the public guardian. And exactly. They bring up a lot of pertinent points. I mean, everything that we talk about isn't there, but it's a start. You know what I mean?
Right. So and I will be connecting you with Dr. Fine and Bob Gettinger because they know exactly what's going on, and I think that you two can, all you guys, can really sit out there and talk. And these are some big advocates that are coming out in the Alameda County area. So I'll be connecting everybody after the show or the next day or two. I mean, sometimes I always say I'm going to connect you the next day. It doesn't happen, so give me a couple days. But I'll be passing out phone numbers if I can get everybody's okay to do that.
Yeah,
that would be great.
Yeah.
If that's all right with you, everyone.
Maybe we can all get together on Zoom.
We need to support in Northern California.
Zoom would be excellent. So if anybody wanted to do that, include me in. We could talk about this Venus. There's a lot to talk about. I've been seeing all the information coming in. This is the time to go on right now. I think we've been making some good headway. But I just want to thank you, Janet, tremendously for putting this all together. I mean, thank you so much for that. This has been a great show,
welcome.
Dr. Fine. Janet, Robert,
hi Janet. I know Janet out there, Luann. Hi Janet, Fellin.
Right. Well, Janet, I don't think she's on. I'm not sure if she lost the phone connection, but I'm sure she's listening. Anyway, we want to thank our guests for coming on.
Absolutely.
You guys have been amazing, and Dr. Fine, I'll be in touch with both you and Robert soon to talk about what we can also do to help you with your legislation. We have some big legislators out here in Colorado that are helping us, and maybe we can do something about this as well out here in Colorado.
Yeah.
But thank you guys for coming on.
This could be a big
move.
Yes, it'd be a big movement, and we've got some really big people on our side. Justice requires
transparency and
accountability. And giving up is not an option, everybody. You think you're having problems,
but
we have the questions. You. Marcy, thanks for coming on. Hillary, you're always with us, whether you're with us here with spirits or whatever. Thank you. I know you're feeling a little bit under the weather, but thank you for coming on with us.
Everybody.
Yeah. So thank you for coming on. And remember, you can always share this link that I have. We'll be posting it everywhere. And remember to go to courtvictim.com, I think it is. And judge, and go look at what they have to offer over there for this bill. And if anybody needs to get in touch with any of these people, contact me at Faceus Radio, FACEUS Radio, at hotmail.com.
And once again, those websites are cleancourts.org, courtvictims.com, and uglyjudge.com.
Court victims. Without the
court victim.
Yeah, courtvictims.com, right?
Victim. An ugly judge or judge. Ugly judge.
One more time for everybody. Hold on, Marcy.
I'm sorry, is it court victims or court victim?
Yeah, courtvictim.com, uglyjudge.com, and cleancourts.org.
All right.
Okay.
Thank
Okay.
We're
going to go ahead and try to
post
on there.
To remember.
There you go. Well, we want to thank everybody for coming on once again. I'm glad you threw that up for us. Let's do this, everybody.
Let's make some changes.
God bless.
We will.
God bless you.
Thank
we are signing off right now.
Okay.
We will see you next week. And Janet, thank you once again.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.